Another measure that died in the House this week was legislation designed to improve mine safety. The so-called Robert Byrd Mine Safety Protection Act, which would have increased penalties on companies that endanger miners, was written after April's disaster at the Upper Big Branch mine in West Virginia. 29 miners died in the explosion there, and federal officials are still investigating. It was the worst mining disaster in the U.S. in 40 years, and it put the spotlight on Don Blankenship, the controversial CEO of Massey Energy, the company that owns the mine. Rolling Stone magazine is also shining a spotlight on Blankenship in a scathing profile that calls him the dark lord of coal country and says that the Upper Big Branch tragedy is just the tip of Blankenship's devastating legacy of environmental damage and pollution in Appalachia. Journalist Jeff Goodell wrote that story. You can read it at hereandnow.org. And Jeff joins us. Jeff, you've been on our show before, and we know that you've been critical of the coal industry, but this profile is very damning. You say that Blankenship turned Massey Energy into a national symbol of lethal greed and is the embodiment of everything that's wrong with the politics of energy in America today. Those are very strong words.
They are strong words. And, you know, I would like to say that I'm not sort of against coal per se. I think that there are certainly better and worse coal operators in the United States, and coal is a very important part of our energy infrastructure. Half the electricity in America comes from coal, and we're not going to get off coal immediately. But, you know, coal has a lot of real serious problems, like the damages from mountaintop removal mining in West Virginia, the heating of the planet from CO2 emissions, and air pollution and other problems. And Don Blankenship embodied all the sort of dark side of the coal industry, and that is the denial that coal causes any of these problems. He believes that global warming is a hoax, something promoted by what he calls greeniacs as a way for environmental groups to kind of get rich from promoting this idea. He has lobbied very hard against any kind of strictures on mountaintop removal mining, which is devastating much of Appalachia and really destroying the water supply.
And can you explain what that kind of mining is?
Sure. The traditional kind of mining, when people think about coal mining in Appalachia, is, you know, the sort of underground mining, similar to the mine where the 29 men were killed in April. But what's become more and more popular in the state is these huge, enormous surface mines where they basically go after coal seams that are too thin to get from an underground mine. And so what they do is essentially, instead of removing the coal out of the mountain, they remove the mountain from the coal. They take the tops of the mountains and they just basically blow them up and dump the top of the mountain into rivers and streams until they expose these thin coal seams. And then they go in with essentially shovels and trucks and haul the stuff out. And it's the cheapest way to get coal out of the ground, but it's also the most environmentally devastating.
So essentially what you're saying is that Blankenship was paid very well, $18 million a year or so, to run Massey Energy. And what he did really was he devastated the environment, cut corners when he shouldn't have, compromised miner safety. Is this sort of the case that you're laying out here? Can you just go into a little bit more detail about that?
What really Blankenship embodies is coal as a kind of commodity. What he was successful at was figuring out ways to get coal out of the ground the cheapest and most efficient ways possible, and to hell with everything else. And by everything else, I mean the damage to the environment, to the mountains there from mountaintop removal mining, risks to the safety of the miners who are working underground, being heavily involved in state politics. And in fact, in my piece, I talk about his essentially, you know, buying off a state judge, having a big influence in the elections there, using his political throw weight in the state to get his way on all kinds of regulatory issues. I mean, coal has been the engine of the economy in Appalachia for, you know, 150 years, and someone like Don Blankenship, who is the biggest coal operator in that region, has enormous political throw weight in the state.
Hmm. And so that's how he was allowed to do it, at least in the state. But what about federal officials? Why wouldn't federal officials have seen that there were so many problems, particularly at the Upper Big Branch mine, before it exploded? And why let him get away with this?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And that's one of the questions that sort of needs to be asked right now. I mean, the simplest answer is that the federal agency that is oversees mine safety, which is the Mine Safety and Health Administration, which is part of the Department of Labor, had basically been gutted during the Bush administration. had been turned into a kind of, instead of an enforcement agency as it should be, a kind of oversight agency, which would fine mine operators like Blankenship for various infractions, but never do anything serious, like, for example, shut down a mine, which is clearly what this Upper Big Branch mine should have been shut down. They had 500 safety violations in the previous year, a number of evacuation orders. It was well known to all the miners who were working there that this was a very, very dangerous mine, and yet it wasn't shut down. And, you know, there are stories about mine safety inspectors, corruption. It's a very, you know, a complicated world there in Appalachia, and a lot goes on underground that is never talked about. And why this mine wasn't shut down and how they get away with this is part of this larger story that has not been told yet.
Hmm. And Blankenship actually tried to say that it was the federal officials who were at fault for the explosion at Upper Big Branch.
Right, that's one of the sort of remarkably shameless acts that Blankenship has pulled on in the aftermath of this. It's basically saying, you know, that it was the fault of the Mine Safety and Health Administration for forcing an improper ventilation plan on the mine that caused the death of these miners, and that he and Massey had nothing to do with it, that they made no errors, that they he kept saying that he had a very clear conscience about all of this. When in fact, if you look at the history not only of Massey in general, but of this mine in particular, it's clear that they were all kinds of violations all of the time, and that there's lots of evidence that has come out that has shown that Massey has put production above safety in their mines for years. But without any kind of sort of regulatory power, with essentially the state of West Virginia and federal agencies looking the other way on many of these laws, there's not much they could do to stop it. That's why you would see things like coal activists, you know, laying down in front of bulldozers, chaining themselves to the gates of Massey strip mines and things like that.
That's journalist Jeff Goodell talking about his profile of Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship in Rolling Stone magazine. And Jeff, according to your story, there was plenty of evidence that this mine was not safe, that it should have been shut down by federal officials. You also outline a litany of problems that you say can be traced to Don Blankenship, that he destroyed the mountains of Appalachia with mountaintop mining, that he polluted the water, that he sickened hundreds of people. Is there anybody who defends Don Blankenship?
Sure, there are people who will defend Don, not so much now, but because one of the things that happened to Don Blankenship was, you know, there's in West Virginia and Appalachia coal country, a lot of things are tolerated because everyone is so dependent upon operators like Blankenship for their jobs and for their economy, and not just the miners, but the mine supply companies, the people who, you know, at the corner store who make sandwiches for the miners. Everybody wants, you know, to be quiet about this stuff because they want their jobs to keep going. But Blankenship crossed the line when these 29 miners were killed, and because he risked knowingly or seemed to knowingly put profits ahead of human life of these miners. And that kind of broke the code of silence for a lot of people. Up until then, he had had a lot of, and certainly a number of defenders who said, look, you know, coal's a dangerous, dirty business, but, you know, this is what we've been doing for a couple hundred years, and coal is important for the American economy, and this is how we get it out of the ground, and Don Blankenship might not be, you know, the nicest guy in the world, but, you know, his mines are making money, and he's paying our bills, and so, you know, there was a lot of respect for him simply in that sense. And, you know, I saw him at one of the mine safety meetings that I attended. He pulled up in this $100,000 BMW, you know, and, you know, he has his aura of rich and successful in a kind of a state there where there are not very many rich and successful people, and he gets a lot of respect just for that.
Massey Energy has announced that Don Blankenship will retire as the company's CEO at the end of this year. Is that because of your profile?
Well, I don't know for sure. I mean, that is something that is only known by Don Blankenship himself, probably, and maybe the board members. But I certainly like to think that it helped nudge him out the door.
Hmm. What did they say in the announcement about his retirement?
Oh, he just, you know, it was the usual kind of protocol of, you know, having had the pleasure of serving for 3 decades and time for him to go, and just a kind of general statements that don't really reveal much about the motives of his departure.
Has Massey Energy or Blankenship responded to your story at all?
No, not at all, which is not surprising.
And you didn't talk to him for your story.
Well, I did. I mean, I tried to contact him several times, and I attended a talk that he gave in Bluefield, West Virginia, about mine safety, and went up to him afterwards and introduced myself and explained what I was doing, and he sort of basically shook my hand and said, you know, contact me at the office, and that was it. You know, I did all I could as a journalist to get his point of view into the piece.
Do you think that the culture around coal mining is changing? Do you think that this explosion was sort of a tipping point to increase awareness about what might be going on?
Yeah, I do think it is. I think it's not just I think that it is a tipping point, because I think that it's become clearer and clearer, certainly in Appalachia, that the coal industry is on the decline. Senator Robert Byrd talked about this right before his death, that he had been one of the biggest defenders of the coal industry for his entire career. And one of his last public statements was about the fact that, you know, this era is coming to an end, and West Virginia and Appalachia needs to think differently about their economy in the future, and that they can no longer depend on coal because all of the cheap, easy to get coal is gone, and, you know, production is falling and falling and falling. And this is, you know, a 19th century fuel source. And I think that in a number of ways, this this tragedy at Upper Big Branch and Blankenship's fall is the kind of end of an era. And I think that there's a broad recognition that this region needs to think differently about their future.
And the rest of the country as well.
Well, I think that in the rest of the country, it's a little bit more complicated, because I think that, you know, there's still a lot of coal in places like Wyoming, and coal is booming again in Illinois. I think that in the long run, coal is, you know, a sunsetting industry, that because of the problems with global warming and CO2 emissions and cheaper energy sources being developed now very quickly with solar and wind and all kinds of things, even nuclear. You know, coal is essentially an inefficient fuel source, especially here in the United States. And everyone knows that it's a short-term game. And but there's a big rush right now to profit off of that before this sort of door really closes on this.
And I have to ask, you know, this has been a big year for Rolling Stone. There was the profile of General Stanley McChrystal, which now your profile of Blankenship is being compared to. That profile of McChrystal quoted him as being critical of the Obama administration. McChrystal was forced to resign. There was Matt Taibbi's reporting on the financial crisis. What is it about Rolling Stone that's leading to this kind of journalism?
I think it's really a statement about the commitment of the magazine to doing this kind of journalism. I mean, there aren't that many places that still are willing to let a reporter like me spend, you know, 3 months full time on a story and really get into it and really dig in and then to write things bluntly and to say what I think. And I think that, you know, there's a kind of fearlessness at Rolling Stone that is largely lacking in a lot of the more corporate-owned media.
Right. Well, so and finally, I have to ask: does Blankenship know where you live?
Well, I'm sure he could find out easily enough. But I have a very big dog.
Well, all right. Well, Jeff, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff Goodell's story about Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship appears in Rolling Stone magazine. You can read it at hereandnow.org.